Welcome to the Practice Podcast, a show created by lawyers to help lawyers in life and business without all the complicated lawyer language. Let's welcome Bast Amron founders and your hosts, Jeff Bast and Brett Amron.
Welcome to a special edition of the Practice Podcast. This episode is a recording from Bast Amron's 6th Annual Business Advantage Forum, which took place on January 18th, 2024. The forum is a learning and networking event we host and underwrite each year, with all proceeds donated to a charitable organization. This year, our theme was connections, how to balance emotional intelligence with artificial intelligence in today's workplace. And we donated the proceeds from the event to Legal Services of Greater Miami, an organization that provides free legal services for the low-income communities of Miami-Dade and Monroe counties. This panel is called Harmonizing Humanity and Technology, Connecting the Workplace in the Digital Age. Every day, we are witnessing incredibly rapid advances in technology, including social media and, more recently, artificial intelligence. These advances are supposed to make us more effective and more efficient, yet our ability to maintain our most important connections may actually be deteriorating. This panel of experts will discuss the importance of staying connected as we embrace technological changes in our workplace and world. They will explore topics focusing on the importance of our connections to colleagues, networks, clients, and communities. How do we manage cohesion between people, processes, knowledge, and innovation in our workforce? Other topics include exploring the intersection of emotional intelligence and artificial intelligence to enhance workplace dynamics. We hope you enjoy this recording, and you can find more recordings from our prior years here on the podcast or on our website at bastamron.com/news. Our first panel today, we have, as you can see, our three phenomenal, well-credentialed panelists. It's going to take me a minute or two to read their bios because I really want you to understand who's up here and who you're going to be hearing from. This panel is on harmonizing humanity and technology, connecting the workplace in the digital age. As we all know, as we heard, there's benefits and challenges to all of that. Let me introduce our first panelist sitting in the middle, Melissa Medina. She's a native to Miami, Florida. Melissa Medina is the CEO and president of Emerge Americas, a venture-backed platform focused on transforming South Florida into a global tech hub. The Emerge Americas signature event, launched in 2014, is a global tech conference held annually at the Miami Beach Convention Center. With Melissa's leadership, the Emerge Americas conference now attracts more than 20,000 attendees from over 50 countries. Emerge gathers the brightest minds and convenes investors, entrepreneurs, innovators, business executives, government leaders, academia, and renowned subject matter experts from across the globe to discuss technologies transforming our lives. In addition to the annual conference, Emerge organizes and hosts year-round executive summits, innovation challenges, startup pitch competitions, masterclasses, webinars, everything, as well as publishes venture activity and investment insights reports and publications. Melissa has been at the forefront of helping to foster a thriving entrepreneurial and tech ecosystem in South Florida. She's also the president of the Medina Family Foundation, which has a mission to fund local initiatives that focus on mentoring children and empowering families by enhancing education and quality of life. And she sits on the board of the Miami Foundation and Roots of Hope. Melissa was named by the South Florida Business Journal as one of the 2023 Power Leaders in Technology. She is passionate about transforming Miami into a global tech hub and supporting Miami-based nonprofits who seek to empower tomorrow's leaders. And as you heard from President Pumariega, she is a mother and passionate about her 5 children. Welcome, Melissa Medina. Next, we have Laura Juanes Micas. Laura is a multilingual law, regulatory, policy, and privacy specialist with more than 20 years of professional experience. She currently serves as the Vice President Privacy Officer at RBI, Restaurant Brands International, owner of the iconic brands Burger King, Popeyes, Tim Hortons, and Firehouse Subs. She also sits on the board of directors Caixa Bank Payments and Consumer, a leading consumer finance firm in Spain and Portugal. Prior to joining RBI, Laura served as Chief Privacy and Compliance Officer at Constella Intelligence, a leading cybersecurity firm. She also served as Global Privacy Policy Director at Facebook, where she led a global team providing policy and regulatory advice on privacy matters. Before joining Facebook, she served in various capacities at Yahoo, including as Assistant General Counsel, Global Privacy and Human Rights, and General Counsel at Yahoo Spain.
That tells you how old I am.
We're not outing anybody here. Lauda is a proud board member and founder of Women in Tech Miami Council, with a mission to connect and empower women in diverse technological backgrounds, and a mentor of startups and entrepreneurs in South Florida and Latin America. Welcome, Lauda. And last but certainly not least, Carlo Rodriguez. Carlo is Managing Director of EVs and Electrification at Ryder System. In this role, Carlo is responsible for leading all areas of EVs and its ecosystem, from electrification advisory services, leasing and renting, charging and its infrastructure, maintenance and telematics, and onboard technology, to program management of this startup new product. Now, 17 years at Ryder. Carlo began as an in-house attorney. After a decade serving the law department, he joined Ryder internal clients on the business side and product management. Carlo held a variety of positions of increasing responsibility for several products representing a significant book of Ryder business, including SelectCare maintenance and on-sites that provide various choice lease and SelectCare services at nearly 175 customer locations. Carlo is on the board of History Miami Museum, a leadership donor for United Way, and a 40 under 40 outstanding lawyer of Miami. Prior to Ryder, Carlo was an account executive at Paramount Pictures and practiced law at Hunton and Williams in Miami. Welcome, Carlo.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wasn't kidding when I told you we had very qualified panelists up here. Before we start to hear from the panelists, I do want to take a survey on the topic that we're going to discuss from the audience. A show of hands, how many of you work remotely or have employees that work remotely? Yeah, a majority, right? Mm-hmm. How many use online chat forums to communicate with others at work? Yeah, majority, right? And finally, for this area, how many are more intentional today than in the past about your in-person interactions at work? Meaning you have to plan them, right? Right, a majority, right? So I just want to read a couple of statistics around remote working as well. There's a lot of publicity, I should say, around some companies like Meta and Zoom, whoever called their workers to the office. Well, we've all read about it, we've seen about it. But overall, remote work numbers are flat for 2023. About 27% of the U.S. employees work remotely. And by 2025, it is expected that there would be 36.2 million American employees working remotely. So that number is expected to go up over the next few years. That creates some benefits and challenges, right? Mm-hmm. So, Melissa, I'll start with you.
Sure.
What changes have you seen through business as a result of employees having to work remotely, in effect, trying to keep that culture or create a culture at companies?
Yeah. So, first and foremost, thank you so much, Brett. Thank you for having me and including me amongst this esteemed panel. It's nice to see familiar faces and meet some new friends as well. I think the workforce and the way people interact with their teams has changed dramatically. I mean, we saw it in the numbers. Specifically from an Emerge perspective, I can tell you that until March of 2020, and we're, you know, a tech platform, we were in the office every single day, minimum 9 to 5, 9 to 6, probably later. At that time, I still had 5 children, right? They were all born by that time. And the pandemic, I think, if anything, just made us really kind of look back and think, how was that even? I mean, I don't even know how we were all in the office all day, every day. I can't imagine going back to that. This is from our team. Mm-hmm. I think from an Emerge, the events that we host, the webinars, the accelerator, we host an accelerator program for entrepreneurs. That has completely changed too. Whereas right now, we're seeing, for example, for our tech conference, we're celebrating 10 years now in April, which is a huge milestone, not only for us, but for South Florida as a whole. Super excited about that. And we are seeing now that people are using Emerge, the conference that's coming up in April, as a way to meet with their teams in person. Whereas pre-COVID, that wasn't even something that we were marketing or really even thinking about, where people are telling us, you know what, we're going to use this as a full internal staff meeting to all get together in person and meet in Miami, spend several days there so we can connect in person. So that has really changed for us. And another thing we're seeing specifically from our entrepreneurial programs, we host an accelerator program that has been virtual, even pre-COVID, for the first 6 weeks. And then it ends in person at the conference, where we provide funding for these startups, connect them with corporate brands and partners, et cetera. And something else that we're seeing in last year's cohort is that we had co-founders who had been co-founders for 2 years and had never met in person until the end of our program in Miami. Co-founders.
Wow.
Of a full organization. One was in Boston, one was in California. They had never met in person.
No ideas, Jeff. No ideas.
But so it really has changed. I think, you know, my personal opinion dealing with large corporate brands and startups from the idea phase is that there has to be some sort of hybrid combination. The in-person, you cannot pull that away. I think Madeline spoke beautifully about that. But I think employees also feel that they have a lot more, what's the word? They're more empowered to say, I don't want to be in the office full time anymore. Whereas I think pre-COVID, it was difficult for an employee to feel that empowerment to say, no, I only want to be there 4 days a week, or I can do my job 50-50. You know, there are some brands, as you said, that they're calling everybody back. But in my opinion, for the most part, and I think to keep your employees happy, that hybrid model is the way to go.
Laura, want to
sure.
add
on that? Yes, by the way, I was at the, I remember the first.
I know you were a supporter.
Conference.
I met her when she was at Facebook
at the time. And I remember telling one, this is going to be huge, people. And here we are.
Thank you.
Yes. So my experience is a little bit different because having worked at global tech companies for the last 20 years, and also having been not at headquarters, somehow I managed not to move to California. I have always been somewhat remote, right? Because I've always had to connect with the mothership, and I've always had teams spread all around the world. I've managed teams with people in Asia, in Latin America, in other parts of, in Europe, in other parts of the US. So I've always been familiar with remoteness, and I've always had to your point and to what Madeline was saying before, be intentional about how our teams meet, how we gather, and what is the culture and what are the values that we're trying to create, and how do we make those permeate through the screens, right? Finding strategic moments like conferences and stuff to actually get everyone together, making sure that there's space for personal moments, not just work, making fun with the technology. But for us, when I started in Yahoo back in the early 2000s, my first shock, right, coming from a normal, quote unquote, normal job was, these people are using Messenger all the time, right? What are they doing? What are they doing with Messenger? Like, what is this, right? Can they make it stop? And now I think with the pandemic, everybody, there were many companies around the world that were still using conference call bridges, right? That were not even using video conference. But now I think after the pandemic, we've all caught up to somewhat a similar reality. And now we're trying to figure out, every company is trying to figure out what works for them. Yeah. In terms of physical presence, in terms of remote presence, in terms of creating a culture that resonates with employees. And I think every company has to figure out, every corporation has to figure out what works for them and their employees. But there needs to be a lot of intention behind it to make it work and to retain and to keep your employees engaged. And that's the challenge.
Yeah, Carla, you guys both have talked about different platforms, and I know we have different platforms that we communicate. We have email and text
Slack.
We use Avaya, and you know, there's a chat forum in there. How do you manage that, where there's so many different platforms, and perhaps each employee or each department may react differently or may prefer one over the other? How do you manage that so that everyone can be on the same page and make sure that communication is flowing?
Yeah, so for us, we started with, we were using Lotus Notes when I started after Hunton and Williams. We weren't even on Outlook, so we went through this app called Yammer, and then we went to Skype, and ultimately, we're on Microsoft Teams now. Mm-hmm. So we used that for video conferencing, for chat, and luckily, we had all that set up before the pandemic, so it was a smooth transition. And for us, Ryder's worldwide headquarters is here. It started with one truck in Miami Beach. Jim Ryder figured out that the person delivering goods was making more than he was at the construction site. And I think it was only like another 10 cents an hour or something like that. So he bought one truck. And now it's a fleet of 250,000 vehicles. It does $13 billion annual revenue. So it's a great story, but it's a transportation logistics company. And believe it or not, Ryder still has not gone back to the office, and we don't plan on going back. So we sold our headquarters. That's right off the turnpike. If you've been by there by Doral, you could see the building. We sold that space, and we're moving to a smaller headquarters this year in Coral Gables. And it's all going to be, you know, we're still going to be remote, but you could reserve office. You could reserve conference rooms.
It's more like the shared workspace type model.
And nobody, even leadership, is not going to have offices. Maybe our CEO, chairman, I think we're going to give him an office. But other than that...
It's a good idea.
Yeah. So we're not going back, and we're having to manage in this new environment.
So how does that work, you know, in terms of with culture at Ryder, given everyone used to be in a building and everyone used to come together and sort of the human interaction was just organic, right?
Yeah.
You'd walk in the morning, good morning, how are you? Oh, how are the kids? How, you know, how's everybody doing? Now you don't have that, right?
Yeah.
So how has that affected the culture, if any, and what is Ryder doing? What are you guys doing to sort of manage that?
Yeah, so a few things. One, the new office in Coral Gables is going to be in a better spot. We were by Medley before. There wasn't a lot of restaurants or bars or pedestrian traffic. So being in Coral Gables, I think, will bring people in. We have a balcony in our new building. We're going to be in the Colonnade building. They keep talking about this exciting coffee bar they're going to put in to bring some of the, you know, younger generations into the office. So we're going to have that now, which is going to be new. But we had a leadership summit in Orlando where we brought together most of the company. We try to have team meetings every once in a while. We're having one coming up for our team. And then we use conferences sometimes to get together in Vegas or in Anaheim, where some of our advanced clean technology conferences are. We'll get together there and do meetings. And then our team has been creative. So when we're on team calls, every once in a while, we'll do kind of a happy hour and we'll do like a scavenger hunt game that you can find it online where you can facilitate games and the group will do scavenger hunt and they got to run to the kitchen and find X and run and find this. One time we had a, I think it was for our holiday party, we had an MC that did a mixology class and made certain cocktails and gave you the history of where the cocktail started. And so getting creative like that has helped.
But no one gets to drink the cocktails.
No, we drank.
Right. So there's more intentionality behind that to help with the culture and keep teams
for sure
together. Melissa, what are you seeing either at Emerge or in your team or with others that you're hearing in the community about how they're sort of keeping their culture, fostering culture in this environment?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of these types of narratives, and it's the same with our team. And again, pre-COVID, we were on the office. We had nobody remote. Right now, our COO lives in Virginia. Our director of entrepreneurship and startups lives in New York. Mm-hmm. And that would have never happened pre-COVID. But that, I think the word intentionality keeps coming up. And so now we make sure that we have quarterly offsites, what we call them, here in Miami. This is our headquarters. Mm-hmm. And we have them for at least 2 days. We're very strategic about our agenda for those 2 days, but also making sure to create some fun moments for the team. We have them in really cool locations. So we do that 4 times a year. And then 3 times a week, the full team is on Zoom. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I mean, we're always connecting on Slack. And I think that's the interesting part about hybrid work. Whereas before, sometimes, you know, you're in the office 9 to 6 or 7 or even 8 p.m. at night, and then you leave there just drained and you don't even want to like deal with work. I feel that it's a temptation to always be connected, right? But at the same time, you also feel that flexibility where, you know, as a parent, I was constantly with the logistics and still am. It's crazy. But with the logistics of missing this game and that game and who's picking up and who's dropping off because I needed to be there for my team in person. I was not going to be a leader that everyone has to be in the office and I'm not there. That's just not what I was going to do. But now I feel like I can breathe and I have that flexibility to look at my week and say, okay, I can be at the girls' soccer game or our boys' lacrosse games and figure it out. And I think that allows me to then maybe come home and be working from 10 p.m. to midnight, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that flexibility. And I feel that my employees feel that too. We actually also completely changed. We don't even count vacation days anymore. It's just that it's open policy and you're getting your work done. You don't have to like put in, we have to know you're gone. But you don't have to request time, except for April, which is our large conference. Right. Like that's not an option. You can't be vacationing throughout April, but throughout the year. And it's really interesting. I think the employees love it. They do not abuse it. Obviously, if it's abused, well, we would think about it again. But a lot of companies I'm seeing are doing that across the board too.
So with existing team members going more remote or doing hybrid, it's a little easier if you know people, right? Then you can connect with them. What about, Laura, with onboarding a new employee, the interview process or recruiting in this environment? What challenges or even benefits, frankly, do you see?
Well, I think the clear benefit is, right, your pool of candidates, right, just widens and opens up. And the people who, in a more traditional environment, would not even have a chance, right, to get to the interview seat and who might be perfect for a role are now in the mix. And I think that's one of the, you know, that's one of the beauties of technology. I think there's also, you can always fly candidates, right? You can always make space for an in-person meeting, or you can always ask a team member that is close to that person to go and have an in-person conversation, because it's true, right? There is that vibe that sometimes it's harder to grasp when you are meeting a person for the first time through a screen. Sometimes it's there even through a screen and it's immediate. And when you know, you know. Sometimes you do need something else, but there are tools and options out there, and you can get a little bit creative. I think you can get there and reach to many more people than you would originally if you, in the past, right, where you're seeking candidates that are already, for example, let's say in Miami, right?
Yeah, and Carlo, it seems like Ryder, obviously being the brand that it is and being how large it is, obviously had this issue anyway before COVID or remote work really took hold. But now that you don't have the global headquarters, right, do you fly people in? You know, do you recruit outside of Miami, you know, for admin or people that, you know, you may not otherwise have recruited in the past?
So we built the EV business just last year, and we were able to add, to the points we were making, we were able to add somebody in California, North Carolina, Colorado, and Texas. Before, we were just in Miami. Everybody had to come into headquarters. So now we're covering different regions, and it's been great for our business because a lot of the activity for electric vehicles and sustainability is in California. So there's conferences there. We could divide and conquer. It helps us with budget. But all of my new teammates, I did not fly them in. I just did the Teams video meetings and just made sure enough Ryder employees at the time interviewed them, and we vetted it, we talked more about it, and we had to be, I guess, a little bit more intentional and careful because we weren't seeing them in person. But we just went video and hired, and then as soon as they were hired, we brought them to that first conference that was early in May of 2023. And then that was kind of our first team meeting and the first time we met.
I think you just need to be thinking about this, right? You have to have a better sense of what you want, right? So that then it's easier for you to find it in the person you're interviewing, even if it's just through the screen. I think this becomes a lot harder if you're not very clear on what you're looking for. Then making a choice becomes a lot harder.
Yes, agreed.
So maybe the criteria, sort of setting that out, and then the vetting process might.
Right.
Yeah. We hired a director of partnerships based in San Diego. He started in August. We've obviously met him since because he's come to Miami for the quarterly meetings. But the whole interview process, calling his references, all of that, everything was totally remote, and he got the job. And I think Carlo made a great point. He's been able to, he was just at CES, which was a lot closer of a trip for him.
Yeah.
And he's gone to a lot of other meetings and conferences throughout California, which is something that we hadn't thought about before either. Now that our team is remote, we're figuring out there are some advantages.
So in the startup world, moving to that for a minute, right? I think you touched on this a little bit earlier, which is, there are situations now where more opportunities, I would say, for startups here to pitch investors outside of Miami.
Yeah, that entire dynamic, and I wouldn't even say just captive of Miami, but having been running an accelerator program now almost 10 years, pre-COVID, an entrepreneur, at least the ones, the hundreds that we've worked with, none of them would have pitched an investor via Zoom. It just would not have happened. I mean, especially if the investor is giving you the time and saying, I'm interested potentially, whether it's your pre-seed, seed, series A round, that entrepreneur would have gone on a plane straight to New York or California where the investor is to pitch them in person. That entire dynamic has changed. And it's, I think the investors appreciate that too now. Whereas before, they wanted to see you in person and to you to pitch them in person. Sure, there might be follow-up meetings. The investor might fly here or vice versa. But that has changed dramatically, dramatically. And I think just for senior level executives, and I'll use my father as an example, generationally, he, the same, he would have never taken a meeting via Zoom pre-COVID. I mean, and like people say, oh, you know, he's in tech. It just, no, I'm flying to New York or someone's coming here, we're going to meet in person. And that entire day, it's been a mind shift completely.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, we do it. We do Zoom, we appear in court and take depositions and stuff like that. But I still, the in-person,
yeah, there's certain things, you can't replace that.
Right?
No, absolutely. And really getting to know your team members. Like when we finally met James, as our director of partnerships in San Diego. When we finally met him in person, I mean, as Melon said, I'm a hugger. So I was like, oh my gosh, James, you know, not via Zoom anymore. And
right.
Just talking about his daughter and his wife and his family. And you just have much more conversations in person. You know, Zoom, there's a topic and there's usually a reason for that meeting. And you're 30 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So it's, there's nothing that can replace that in-person aspect.
Speaking of intentionality, I would think that your background, right? Of where your camera sort of aims
completely.
Is super important, where you're sitting.
Oh, completely. You
know, right? Where you didn't
there's
think
a lot of
that.
Like Zoom bloopers for sure.
Right? If you're on a conference call, nobody was thinking about that. And now you have your camera on. It's like, what's that in the background?
A lot of
reading?
Virtual backgrounds.
A lot of virtual backgrounds,
right.
Or what books are they reading, or right?
Yeah.
Super interesting.
So you can learn a lot about a person
by
the background, for sure.
Yeah, or if there's too much light and then you can't see them. And yeah. So before we get into the next area, another poll question for the group. How many of you do not take your phone into a meeting, an in-person meeting? Ah, no
oh,
hands.
Oh, God.
Right. How many of you, if you take it into a meeting, how many of you either put it in your bag, put it away, or put it into a basket so you can't see it during that meeting? All right,
yeah,
more hands there.
Definitely.
That's fair. Now let's switch to if you're on a Zoom meeting, okay? How many of you do that? You put it away, you can't see it, you can't access it. I like that. There's a few of you. So, right, that's a challenge.
Yeah,
it's always been
a
challenge
really
with
point.
Tech.
You should come here.
Yeah.
You should come.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we need to learn
some tips,
right?
Yeah.
You know, because phones were around before COVID, before remote work.
Yeah.
We all walked
Such
into meetings, and you have to sort of balance in certain times, obviously, the need to be connected and, But what's sort of the etiquette now online? We talked about this, before we got here today, and I'm sitting there with, and I'm sure you all are too, on Zoom with you guys, and I've got two other screens.
Yeah.
And stuff is filing in, and it's hard to not see it. So do you have these conversations with your teams, mm-hmm. About what you expect and what etiquette you have? Laura, you'd start us off if you would.
I need to do this more, right? And I think our conversation also actually helped bring this back to, to the front of my mind. Because I think that setting some etiquette rules in advance of a meeting or in advance of a conversation is really going to help everyone get the most out of those moments that you're spending together. Admittedly, I don't do it enough, and I'm guilty as charged of checking a million screens and trying to multitask,
which none of us can do.
Yes. Exactly,
it's scientifically proven.
I do that more than I should. But then, when you catch yourself and when you force yourself to be present in the moment, like I'll tell you, the conversation that we had, I was not able to log in with my computer, again, technology. So I had to dial with my phone, right? Mm-hmm. And then I had to be present in the conversation, right? I didn't have any other screen. I was just on my phone talking to you guys.
Right.
And it was one of those aha moments that is like, I need to do this more.
Right.
this is actually, it makes my time much more enjoyable. And I get so much more out of the conversation when I'm just focusing on that single moment. So that is a 2024 purpose.
That's a goal for me.
Yes.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I would say that it's generational, right? I think if we had this conversation with, people who are younger than we are, they would look at us and say, I don't understand. Of course, you can do two things at once. Number one, and number two, I can't not have my phone.
Yeah, right.
Next
yes.
to me.
It's like my arm is going to fall off.
And my arm's going to fall off, right? I mean, we have that, I'm sure, at home. But our team members, when you're sitting, especially today, either again on Zoom or even in person that you get together, I'm sure there's distractions and people are going through stuff. And so do you set any parameters around that?
Definitely in the in-person, when we have our offsites, we have to check in our phones, essentially. We do have, for the entire team, no phones. Of course, there's times throughout the day.
Right.
Go ahead, check your phone. But it really keeps all of us very present, I think, because we all know that, at least, as you said, guilty as charged. I mean, I am very connected to my phone. I think we're just, it's become, I don't know, call it an addiction, a habit, whatever it is. But everything lives in that little iPhone or Android or whatever phone you have. As far as our Zoom meetings, we've definitely spoken about it. I think it also depends the length of the meeting. Mm-hmm. One thing that we're very cognizant about as a team is just whether it's internal meeting or external meeting, just being on time. I think that's one thing that if there's a Zoom meeting from 2 to 2:30, like start logging on a couple minutes before. It's just that type of etiquette, I think, mm-hmm. shows a lot of respect for whoever you're connecting with. And then there's just an awkwardness, I think, of virtual, whether it's Zoom or Microsoft Teams, like where you're looking, because your picture is there. And then if they're sharing a screen, and I am cognizant of, I don't want to feel rude, like if my phone is there. So I'm like looking down, am I looking at in their eyes or not. But I think it's difficult to not have your phone around when you're in a Zoom meeting. Like you could think of an emergency call coming in or right. There's a million excuses, but my phone is usually next to my laptop when I'm on a Zoom. I do turn it around. Mm-hmm. If it keeps on buzzing, I'm like, okay, maybe it's something important. But I try to be as aware of the situation as possible because I don't want people to feel disrespected.
And I think that raises a great point, which is with Zoom or Avaya, sorry, not to use Avaya. Yeah. You're right there. I mean, you can see the person as opposed to in a meeting, if they're sitting at the other end of the table, you may miss if they just sort of glance down or they're looking the other way, right? Yeah. So that presents challenges too, because now your face is right there.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about how the screen I want to multitask with is above my camera. So
your eyes.
I can look at the screen and multitask and people are like, wow, Carlo's really engaged. He's locked in. But
and how many times do you say, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure
I heard that right.
I
missed that one.
Yeah.
So you broke up.
I think right. You just have to have a balance, and it's certainly a skill that all of us in this room have developed. Like we are getting better at different things coming in and Teams messaging or whatever you get. Or I even have a stand for my phone that I could stand it up right in front so it also looks like I'm looking at the computer.
Confessions of Zoom. This panel should be renamed.
Yeah. I believe, though, that there's benefits to all this, that free flowing of information, being able to look at things real time during the meeting and then bring value to that meeting or ask a critical question, or you're meeting with somebody new. Now you could go onto LinkedIn and see where they worked and what are they posting about, and maybe connect with them before you forget. I think all that free flow of information is a positive if you use it right and you try to balance and make sure you're paying attention, listening to keywords. And there's also that you got to know your audience. So there's one executive management person at Ryder that will wait for you to finish. It's that person that'll be like, okay, let me know when you're done. And then they'll continue the discussion. So there's some folks that are more traditional and want that attention and be locked in. There's other folks that don't mind and you know they multitask. And so I think you have to know your audience and just act accordingly.
And maybe it's putting parameters. I think we've touched on, right? You all have touched on parameters around each particular meeting.
Yeah.
How long it's going to be. Maybe there's breaks to allow people to do that. And maybe that forces them to be more present.
Yeah. Great point.
So sort of the last area, the hot button issue for today, right? And we talked about this is AI. How many people in this room use either ChatGPT or something similar that has artificial intelligence capabilities? Yeah, a majority, right? Sitting here today and on the panel as well. So how has AI, as such a general question, but forgive me, how has AI impacted sort of what you've seen in sort of the corporate space and culture and the working environment? Because as President Pumarega mentioned, right, it doesn't replace critical thinking, at least not yet. Critical thinking, empathy, you know, all of that mm-hmm. really creates the culture. But it may start to replace some either people or some of their job function.
Yeah, I think such a large question. I think there's a few things, right? The way I see AI is it has the potential for us as individuals to focus on what makes us human, mm-hmm. right? And what makes us unique, and rely on AI to make us faster, to make us more efficient, to do what we don't like to do, right? To delegate all of those repeatable and scalable tasks. And then we can focus on what Dr. Pumarienko was saying. We can focus on being human. We can focus on building empathy, on building relationships, on doing critical thinking. Or we can be much more strategic and intentional. And I think it's interesting that thanks to AI, we're now again talking all the time about ethics. Amazing, right? Ethics is the new black, right? it's incredible. Who would have thought? Now we have new professions. We have data ethicists. Ethics is in demand in the corporate world for the first time, right? So I do think that from that perspective, mm-hmm. AI brings amazing potential. I also think that at the same time, we have to be mindful. We have to be cognitive about the challenges, like with every new technology, right? It's Oppenheimer. We have to be thoughtful and intentional about the consequences, right? There is human rights ramifications. There is how do we prevent the digital divide to becoming even wider between those who have access to AI and those who don't have access to AI? We do have to be very mindful about how we control this technology as opposed to letting, you know, the technology control us in a way.
Sure. And that's put it like we, as a small business, we had to create a sort of separate section for AI usage. And so I imagine that businesses all over are scrambling to make sure that happens, because you hire people to do a job and then all of a sudden they start using ChatGPT and they start, right. you know, having that sort of take over for them.
So we definitely have embraced AI with solutions that help our company. Mm-hmm. You know, as I mentioned, we hired our director of partnerships in August. We had over 200 applications, and we use an AI tool to go through those applications. I mean, that's streamlining someone's job, helping them, making them more efficient so that we can get down to, you know, a quarter of the candidates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Our director of marketing and multimedia content uses several different AI tools in their social media efforts, in marketing efforts, but they do a lot of research on these tools and how they might help us, how they might benefit us. We're using an AI tool to help us in April with a matchmaking component within our app, where based on certain information that you're inputting as an attendee, whether you're an investor, entrepreneur, tech exec, et cetera, you'll be suggested other people that you might want to meet with. I think that's amazing.
Very cool.
Great way to make connections when you're going to be with thousands of people. So I do see the benefits, and we're clearly using them as an organization. But I also see through my job, I see a lot of threats. For example, we host hackathons for hundreds of developers every year. And it was for the first time in our last hackathon that a developer came up to me. Usually we pick a theme and say, you have to create a solution essentially under this theme, whether it's climate tech, making Miami more resilient. There's been a lot of different themes. And the developer said, you know, what's crazy is that a code that will take me, this is like a 2-day hackathon, so let's say 48 hours to create, I can actually ask ChatGPT. And it really does give me, what he was concerned about is that it really did give me an extremely accurate code. It was, that's threatening for someone that's spent thousands of dollars in whether, you know, it's a coding school or got a coding mm-hmm. degree. So I feel like that group that we work with a lot is feeling that sort of weight on their shoulders yeah. and threatened. There's some really cool AI videos. I don't know if you all know who Peter Diamandis is, but he's co-founder of Singularity University. He's one of the leaders in AI. Mm-hmm. And he pushed out a video of himself talking to himself with real-time AI answers of what he would answer. Fascinating and scary also at the same time.
Yeah.
But is there a scenario in this world that in the future my parents passed away and they don't meet their great-grandchildren and somehow they're having a conversation with their great... Like, those things are really, really happening. And I think Lara made a great point. There's a lot of AI and ethics implications. But AI is, to me, I see it almost like cybersecurity, if you want to look at it as a theme. It's not going away. This is not a fad. It's going to be threaded into all of our lives. And it's how do we get ahead of it somehow to figure out those threats, which are real. There's a lot already of campaigns that have happened with people's persona being stolen, their voices being stolen. And once it's out there and the media rolls with it, it's really hard to pull that back. Yeah. And then I'm seeing in the education sector, I have twin girls that are in eighth grade. Their English teacher, parents night, told us it's the first year ever that she's not allowing them to do any writing outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm not against ChatGPT. Like, I think there are uses for it, but I want them to think critically and learn and actually write their own words. So first year, she said she's ever doing that. So, but she's trying to combat that problem, right?
Yeah, right. So. I love the use of the technology to match people for connections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's fantastic. Carla, how about Ryder? Obviously, there's going to be AI with the logistics component, but what about use with teams and how does that interact with your group?
What I was thinking about was, is AI and a robot going to make my Whopper one day? Could that happen?
Yes, it can.
Or drive the truck.
Yes.
Right?
So Ryder did an AI policy, like you just mentioned, in last year. So there's certain AI tools that are approved by the security and enterprise team, and you could email them at any time to get the latest and greatest. So we've done that. But our team, you know, I've used it a few times. I've used it to get ready to when we unveiled our business, just to get ideas. Interestingly, for this panel, I put it in ChatGPT what the topic was, and it's just so slick. I mean, three key bullet points, but it's interesting because after the ethics thing and some of these other related issues, I asked it for references, and it didn't give me references. It just said, I used this and that to get the information, but if you want ideas or you want reference material, then go with this strategy or go with this approach. And then it listed out how to get more sources and get references. So we've
at
used
least
it here
make
and there.
Them up.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So we've used it here and there. It's going to be interesting for our business because the vehicles are getting smarter. You have onboard technology, you have telematics, you have routing. So we're going to definitely have to deal with it more. Right now, it's at the early stages for us.
How'd I do on the topics, by the way? I did not run this through ChatGPT.
You did great.
No, you did awesome. Did? Okay, awesome. Great. Awesome.
See that? Critical thinking, human mind.
It'll be interesting how the next generation, how our, like the younger generation talks about AI even in the next 10 years. You know, I see even a difference from my oldest is 16 and my youngest is 7. How she's grown up in a, even though they all grew up with technology, mm-hmm. she's even more into technology than the older one. And she talks about Siri like if she's a person, you know, and it's just it's not normal.
But it is.
I know.
They don't know any different.
We were on a road trip and you know how Waze has the voice of like, oh, now turn right, now go straight. And for whatever reason, my husband is obsessed with Waze. Even if like we know exactly how to get there, like he has to put Waze on and say that there's a policeman and I don't know, like plays a game. And my daughter who's 7 gets really frustrated because it interrupts the songs that are playing that she's singing. And she's always like, Siri is so annoying. One, it's not Siri. And two, she references her like a person. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. So we have to think that they are growing up with in a completely different time than we certainly did, than even our older ones did. And I don't know. There's a lot of pressure on parents for sure.
Sure. Teaching skills.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
they otherwise
look someone in the eye. Talk to them, you know?
That they otherwise can use as a crutch, right? Yeah, they can use the technology to get around some of the skills that we didn't have growing up because of the technology, you know, and so.
Right.
The struggle is real.
So before we end, I want to open up to, we have a couple minutes if anybody has any questions. I see Sharon, you have a question. Please stand up and so everyone can hear you.
Sure, I am. Fascinating. Question though, and focusing on the corporate side, how do you level the playing field with a large corporation that can truly afford to support all of the infrastructure around AI, and then a smaller company that has limited resources but needs it just the same?
Well, I do think that the availability of resources is there, right? There is so much open source. There are so many free resources. I think that the challenge is, especially for nascent companies, right? For new business ideas, we still don't know, right? There is a debate of how much of that information can you keep control of and you can claim ownership of, right? Or you can keep confidential while you're using these tools, right? I think that is, I don't know if you guys saw, I think it was about a year ago, there was a very large corporation in the headlines because some of their employees had been using the open version of ChatGPT to review their code and to write summaries of their meetings and to prepare presentations and whatnot. And then plenty of confidential information of this very large corporation. It wasn't a mom and pop shop, was out there and was leaked. So I think the challenge to me, the challenge with AI here is not the lack of resources, because the resources are out there and you can use all the free versions. I think the challenge is keeping control and maintaining ownership and not letting what is core to your business become the public domain. I think that is the challenge.
I don't know, Melissa or Carlo, if you have anything to add on that.
I was just going to say, it's a great point, because there's going to be small businesses at a disadvantage, because you can have AI that you implement in your applications and processes. And if you don't have the resources, you're a small business, you're going to be at a disadvantage to competition. So it's certainly an issue.
Yeah, all I would add is that what I'm seeing from the entrepreneurial ecosystem, startup ecosystem, so many more startups are creating AI-based solutions. So I think your question's a little different, where it's how do you implement AI, whether you're a startup or a corporate? I think every startup right now is thinking either they're creating some type of solution AI so that a corporate can buy them, essentially.
True.
And or the other startups that are in whatever industry they're in, health tech, fintech, climate tech, prop tech, they are thinking about immediately, what are the ways to integrate AI into my company? As far as resources, I mean, startups, they bootstrap, they figure it out, and they're going to prioritize. And I do think that AI right now is one of their priorities, for sure.
All right, we have time for one more. Yes, sir.
You mentioned that you're hiring from different states.
Yeah.
How are you finding the people? Is it Indeed, a recruiter? how are you doing that?
So from Emerge, we have used recruiters in the past for our C-level executives. For this last position we just hired, Director of Partnerships, we posted on LinkedIn, and we have never gotten, we had 200 applications within 2 days.
Wow.
It was insane, which is why we use an AI tool. There's just no way to really be able to comb through all of these resumes. And I think that says a lot. Laura was mentioning earlier, I think Carlo as well, that it really opens up your pool when there isn't this geographic constraint to the position. People are like, I can stay and live wherever I am and apply for the job. So it's a catch 22. But yeah, LinkedIn for us, depending. C-level, we would use a recruiter. Yeah,
we have an amazing recruiting team. And they use a wide suite of tools. And, you know, sometimes for some roles, you have to use a specialized recruiter that knows the field. But we really have a great recruiting team.
Yeah, we're in-house as well. In-house, and then for certain positions, use a third party.
Mm-hmm.
So one more question. Sorry, I know I said last. Sorry, this gentleman in the front really is eager to ask your question. Please.
You mentioned something that has always been on my mind about AI and, for example, taking someone's persona, their voice, for example. There was this very famous song. I don't know if it was Kanye. I'm not exactly sure.
Probably.
He wasn't the one that was singing the song. And then it became an hit, I think, with The Weeknd. And people were like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then like, we didn't sing that.
Yeah.
So someone took it. So my question
is,
you mentioned startups and global, not so much on logistics, but I'm guessing in the global tech maybe. What initiatives or entrepreneurial startups are working on detecting that in order so that someone can protect their brand, their company, their media, their intellectual properties? Because if someone puts out my voice and says that I said certain things, I'm in legal trouble for billions of dollars.
Oh, like, for sure.
How do we detect that, or is that coming down the pipe? You know,
so. Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of technology that is exploring, you know, and there's a lot of companies in more established, but also in the startup space that are looking for ways to maintain and protect reputation, right? Whether it's an individual or whether it's a corporation. And I think it's a combination of your traditional media scanning, but also using much more sophisticated tools to understand what is happening on the internet, but also understanding what is happening on the dark web, right? Behind what we see. I think there's going to be, to your point, right, there's going to be an increasing need for those kind of services and for that kind of, let's say, counter technology, right?
You don't know if the video you're watching is real or the voice you're hearing is real.
Yeah, it's something that's just rapidly evolving. And I think with more of these cases, like the case you said, there was also one that was a very well-known backpack company that the owner of the backpack company is also the face of the company. And then another backpack company took his image, voice, everything. But by the time it got to him, they had already sold, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of backpacks of that other company. Sure, this the other whoever the other person is going to get, you know, sued and all those. But that has created, I think, an opportunity for startups to create these tools to detect it sooner. And that's, it's a matter of time, but it is a real problem across any type of image, likeness, music,
right?
Because AI now can create all of that.
Yeah, and we have that obviously with the election coming. I know we have
that's
more.
That's a whole other topic.
I'm gonna drop that, and then I know there's a lot of other questions.
Yeah.
I do need to let the panelists go, and we need to move on. But thank you guys, and please thank Laura,
thank
Melissa, and Carlo
thank you so
as well.
Much.
For more information on this show and other resources, visit FastAmeron.com and connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at FastAmeron.